Katie from Morley.
And welcome to the Value Coffee Talk podcast.
This podcast is a service of the Enterprise Value Collective, a community for business value-focused leaders and practitioners, and is sponsored by our value consultancy, Genius Drive.
And our mission is to help accelerate your value discussions and articulation in each of your customer engagements and throughout your customer lifecycle. To help us do that today, we have Joy Wilder Libier. She is a seasoned chief revenue officer and fintech executive. Most recently, she led a $1.3 billion portfolio of businesses for Equifax, and that was in automotive, financial services, insurance, telecom, energy, big tech, payments, global partnerships, and inside enterprise sales. Almost lost my breath there. Joy, welcome.
So great to be here, April and Tom. This is going to be a lot of fun. It's my favorite topic, revenue.
Exactly. But before we get to revenue, well, it's related to revenue. Let's talk about buyers a little bit. What have you seen over the past maybe 12, 18 months with B2B buyers?
So I really believe, as you suggest, the market is changing. People do buy from people, but that is insufficient. You know, it's not the slap on the back, how do you do business anymore? Mm-hmm. It's more about how we can use data and insights to factually share the impact of our insights and solutions on the use case or problem that we're trying to help our clients solve. And if your digital IQ isn't much higher than it was 18 months ago, your buyer is not interested.
So what changes do you think that organizations and revenue leaders need to make in their approach with prospects and customers?
So I think, again, so many times we make the mistake of thinking we're in the pretty please business. We have that relationship with others. We know the features of our solutions. I just met with a CEO and she said, they say they just don't have time right now, or it's not a priority, and they're crazy because I could save them so much money. And I was like, well, are you quantifying that for them? Have you actually done the math and shared the math with them? Otherwise, you know, if you have, then they're being fiscally irresponsible. And so our task as revenue officers and as owners of businesses, we have to make sure that we're helping our clients understand the mathematical, the financial value of what we're bringing to market in a compelling way. And that is very hard. Mm-hmm. And so we give up sometimes, you know, oh, let's do a pilot, or let's, you know, make sure that we have the use cases and the pre-sales consulting analytics package for these few, and then it just fizzles out because it is, you know, difficult, but it pays off.
Yeah. I think, you know, some of the challenges that we're seeing, Joy, there's so many more people involved in each one of the decisions in these enterprise groups. And so that's hard for commercial teams. Now they've got to engage with, maybe it was just IT, if it was a technology solution, or maybe one or two business leaders. Now it's going cross-functional. Many more people are involved.
Yes.
That makes it more difficult. Prioritization is a key, as you indicate, where companies just, they've got a lot of elements on their plate with regard to the business and to solve. So how do we make it a priority for each one of those stakeholders? And as a result, deals are stalling, they're taking longer.
Yes.
Do we think that the commercial teams are kind of keeping up with these shifts and are doing a good job with it? And what's getting in the way and holding teams back?
Well, of course, some teams are and some teams aren't, right? And then that's how we make winners and losers. And that's how some companies are able to command more market share than others. I really think continuing to invest in the capabilities of our teammates. And as you suggest, the marketing and the value visualization tools and all of the analytics in a pre-sales context that we need to address the unique positions of a variety of stakeholders. Mm-hmm. I met with a new CEO who's last week, who's bringing to market a new AI tool. And we were chatting about his go-to-market, and he was convinced that his exclusive buyer was the head of the data science area. And I was convinced he was mistaken, right? It's the commercial officer, the people that are owning the P&L, the people that are giving this individual the budget. And so how do we equip the team, as you suggest, across multiple personas who have very different lens on the issue, different problems they're trying to solve, different access to budget. And so how do we create something that's so compelling in our sales engagement that they can't say, not a priority, really don't have the funding after all, it's just not the right time. We really probably need to engage with the other leader after all. It's not my exclusive authority. Now you tell me.
You had said something interesting earlier. I'd love for you to expand upon the pretty please approach, which sounds like a little bit more of the kind of status quo or the natural default. And, you know, what can be done to overcome, and what have you seen in your experience that worked well?
So I guess I coined that phrase as a little tongue in cheek. When people think relying on relationship and long tenure with a portfolio is sufficient for a buyer to say yes. If I say, you know, not technically, but metaphorically, pretty please, because we worked together a long time, because you know this is a great solution for you, because everybody else uses it, pretty please. So no, it goes back to really having to have that solid use case coupled with ROI so that your buyer becomes fiscally irresponsible if they don't move forward. And that's where all of our pre-sale analytics come in. The testimonials from previous buyers come in so that we can say, when a top five bank used this solution, I decreased their delinquency by 17%. And on your portfolio, that means X point Y million dollars, which is a fraction of the investment that you'll need to be making.
Joy, I love it. And I love emphasizing kind of the cost of doing nothing in it as well. There's definitely the ROI and the value piece, but we found that folks move away from pain sometimes a lot more than gravitating toward gain. And the whole concept of getting it to where they understand that here's the cost of you sticking with status quo and doing nothing. You're losing this much in delinquency. And it goes to what you indicated, which is that fiscal irresponsibility at that point, and it kind of puts them to task.
Yes. And I think that's the, you know, part of that creating a compelling event can include the that line of inquiry around, okay, so what happens if you don't do anything? You know, and what about your competitor set? And what are they doing or not doing? Yeah, I appreciate that approach.
So how do you think that CROs can help mobilize the organization to lean more into these value outcome conversations?
That is, I love that you said the organization. I'm going to write a book one day, and it's going to be called How to Be the Boss When You're Not, because none of us have absolute authority over all of the resources that are required to help our customers be successful. And so to get a sale over the line, to deliver that value to the marketplace, it's not just the sales representative and the sales engineer and maybe the pre-sale consultant, the obvious personas. It's also the product and the ops and the tech. And so matrix approach, enrolling the entire organization in the mission and vision of the business, that creates the accountability that you need because people are self-selecting in. Everybody wants to be a part of a winning team. And when you can make the sales professional or the sales organization a little bit smaller so that other personas or participants internally can feel important and an important part of the success, then you can, you know, do a cheers at the end and laugh all the way to the collection of your incentive pay. You know, I think it's just those individuals, especially as we're creating libraries, because we want to rinse and repeat and replicate. We want to create libraries of use case and value, use case and value. And we are so dependent, particularly on our product organization, our marketing teammates for that.
Yeah. Joy, is that where you think it needs to start? We like to think of like value playbooks based on the role of who you're going to visit, maybe the industry they're in. Here are the conversations that you need to have. Here are the insights of why you need to move from status quo. Here are the use cases, and here's the value of those use cases. Is that where you think the best starting point is for this, particularly for companies like you spoke about, several of the CEOs you've been talking to, where they might be earlier or growth stage companies, yes, and they tend to be very product focused, right? And so how do you get them to maybe take more of this value-based approach?
So interesting. Like I said, just hung up with one, and she has big brands in her portfolio, top 10 banks in her portfolio, and yet they're just at the point where they need to, let's call it performance engineering. We need performance engineering. Right now, it's based on a fantastic product that's resonating, that large organizations are seeing the value in, and yet they can't scale that and have more of a repetitive motion, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're doing it based on the fact that she is the evangelist for her product. Mm-hmm. And she's a great one. Okay. We can't scale her, right? We need the performance engineering, the tools, we need the narrative, we need the analytics, right? We need the use cases codified so that we can bring in great teammates that can scale on a direct basis, and then leverage other routes to market, including third parties, right? So that's a whole nother story. Like, this isn't just about a revenue officer team sell on a direct basis. If you embrace dual distribution as an example, you're working with other companies all the more, right? If you're in a reseller scenario, of course, you have to have the packaged precision, I guess, around performance.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I'm sure there's some, you spoke about teaming and kind of the complexity around servicing the customer with a broad group of people inside the organization. And then when you bring in like the reseller relationship, that's an entire other team to mobilize. So I'm curious your perspective on, you know, gaining that momentum with the internal teams. And then how does that translate to a reseller relationship?
Yes. So I think in every revenue officer's competency toolkit, there has to be an appreciation and a little bit of muscle around alliance creation and working with third parties, understanding the importance of governance, how to build it, not to be intimidated by that word or put off by it like I was first day on the job, a intentional engagement model, a set of shared values, all of those things that serve us well that are quite intuitive in a multi-party arrangement. The counterintuitive notion, April, is that we use those internally too. So as I am collaborating internally, I can use those alliance superpowers to help me create alignment on board internally, and then doing that externally as well. And if we don't start and end with the money, there are a lot of saboteurs, unfortunately, in companies and at buyers. And so how do we address the saboteur with the story, with the money, right? Mm-hmm. And then everybody wants to be a part of that success. So it's easier to get on board with that.
I know we've kind of bred generation or an attitude or a mindset of criticism and Monday morning quarterbacking. And like you said, a lot of times you do have to have the metrics and the intelligence and the data and the numbers to support what it is that you're doing. One of the numbers that are curious that we've seen is that more and more teams have fewer and fewer high performers who are making quota and pulling more and more of the weight, particularly in early stage and growth stage. And when a new CRO comes in, or the CROs very much are not interested in maybe developing, but we're seeing this kind of flushing mentality of like, oh, I've got the wrong team. Let me flush them all out. Why do you think we're getting that concentration now of very few high performers pulling more and more of the weight? And what do you suggest as a very experienced CRO to truly overcome this?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not getting any easier, right? So as the selling motion becomes harder and requires more of the sales professional, I think you see a separation from those who are truly constantly honing their craft, taking their craft of revenue generation and salesmanship seriously, really doing the work, putting in the time to continually increase their competencies around the selling motion, but also around their solutions. The solutions that Equifax was representing in the market 5 or 7 years ago were much simpler than the solutions that they're bringing forward today. So I think it's wheat and chaff a little bit. And I think as revenue leaders, what do we do about that? Yes, we can constantly keep revolving door, but perhaps instead do more piloting or thinking through, do you always hire mid-career or late career? Do you have an early career track? Is there a way that you can attract young athletes, if you will, and give them the tools that they need to be successful, and then have a compelling employee engagement environment, a diverse and inclusive environment where people want to stay so that you're not just raising them up and having them go somewhere else? So that might be one tactic. Another suggestion I might have is I live by what I call the success triangle, being clear, making sure my teammates are capable, and making sure they're motivated. And so if we're looking and saying, whoa, only a few people are really getting this done. Okay, we need a diagnostic. Is everybody clear on the mission and the vision of the business and their role in it and what we're trying to do? Are they capable? Have we given, when we look in the mirror, is our conscience clear that we've given the teammates the capabilities that they need in this new digital environment to be successful? And then are they motivated? Well, are we using positive and negative consequence management to make sure teammates are motivated? Have we refreshed our incentive programs? Do we understand where we are from a market perspective in terms of comp? And how variable pay works. Do we have the appropriate negative consequences that help people get back in the game when they do have the skill and they might not have the will at the moment? Is that a fleeting issue that we can address? So I think it starts with that good diagnostic and then making sure, you know, we look at clarity, capability, and motivation.
I love that you took this approach, because I think, as Tom had mentioned, you know, a lot of organizations are coming in and saying, we have the wrong people, let's just go find the right people. And as you mentioned, you know, the technology is becoming more complex, so it takes longer to learn it. You know, the sales cycle is more difficult, and it takes longer to get accustomed to an account and a relationship. And so, you know, in this way, I think where, you know, turnover has been generally high in sales. I think an average of every 18 months or so that people are changing organizations, that this job satisfaction and long tenure could actually have even more impact as you move into the future, where tech is more difficult to learn and the relationship becomes that much more important.
So I have been in situations where I came into the business and did a competency assessment, and the capabilities that were needed and the competencies that I had were a total mismatch. And so in that scenario, some people can build the competencies and some cannot. So I have had situations where I was turning over a third or more of the team. But as you suggest, if it's people were performing and now they're not performing and we're seeing more of a disparity and we don't see the bell curve that we used to see, then we do have to look in the mirror and take ownership of that. It's not just my teammate all of a sudden decided to run soccer carpool because we're in a remote situation and is not giving me their all. It could be the overall engagement that I am, the environment that I'm creating that I should be culpable for, right? To make sure that she has the opportunity for every success.
Enjoy that clarity, the enablement, the activation definitely falls on the CRO. And then the understanding the skills and the wills, I think, is a big part of it too, and doing that assessment. What's the one piece of advice you'd like to leave with our Enterprise Value Collective, our community, with today, Joy?
Keep going. What you're doing is so vitally important. And it will become increasingly important, in my observation, as the business continues to digitize. And the speed of which corporations are moving is escalating. And so having the ability to create those value narratives with the fact base is all the more important. And for people like me, I need you to figure it out. Like, there are some really hard parts of this, like quantification, industry data. Well, how much is the average car sale worth to the average dealer? I don't know that. So helping me get through some of the really kind of brutal work that experts such as yourself can bring to bear is super important. And then you can tell me how fiscally irresponsible I'm being by not using your solutions, right? You can do your thing on your solutions, right?
Always.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Joy, on the Enterprise Value Coffee Talk podcast.
It's been great. I really appreciate it. Let's go.
Awesome. Please sign up for the Enterprise Value Collective LinkedIn GeniusDrive.com website to stay in touch with us on the latest events, tools, research, and insights. Like the episode, gets us up in the rankings. Please subscribe so you know when the latest episodes are posted. And until next time, our Enterprise Value Collective, keep growing and sharing.